Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we look at the latest comics and other media featuring the Transformers. In this episode, we review Skybound's Duke number 5, where his quest comes to an end. But will it launch a new beginning? Today is Friday, May 3rd, 2024, and this is episode 388 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that knows metaphorical revenge is the best kind of revenge. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how's it going?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
I'm here. Let's talk Transformers.
As always, we start the show by thanking our Donatrions, those lovely people who support us on Patreon and PayPal. And this week, we are welcoming a new Donatrion, G. DeNiro. Thank you, G. DeNiro, for signing up for a whole year and buying some of our exclusive comics. So did all that last week, and they deserve a shout out. We gave him one in the toy show and in alt mode. So congratulations. Thank you, G. DeNiro, and welcome aboard. You get all those perks that I'm about to talk about. And, you know, we'll keep the show going. So, of course, as a Donatron, you get access to all the episodes of our bonus show, We Like Big Bots. These are all on our Patreon page, so you can check them all out at, at our transmission at patreon.com/transmissions. And if you are a Donatron, you will have access to them. There are 12 episodes of We Like Big Bots available right now. And 13 and 14 have been recorded. That's what I'm told. So we'll see when those can go up. Hopefully soon.
Let's go with that.
In the meantime, we've got season 3 of Empire of Rust, and that's continuing, and the uncut bonus episode 114, Spider-Bot's Maximum Webbage, is available right now on our Patreon page, and the regular version of this episode will be out next week, next Monday, May 6th, at transmissionspodcast.com/rust. Let me try to cough in between so they can be clearly edited out. Okay. And, of course, we've still got copies of our Skybound Transformers number 1 with artwork by EJ Sue. And that's available at transmissionspodcast.com/comic. You can pick those up. And of course, lastly, we've got our code at toyhacks.com, that May promo code, since we've changed over to the month of May. The code is Matrix, M-A-Y-T-R-I-X, Matrix. Get it? So that'll be easy to remember, and you can use it all throughout the month of May. 15% off all your orders at toyhacks.com, and you cannot use that with any other promos, but you can use it with your Robo points. So there you go. I forgot to put it in our notes here, but I do want to mention that this is the last day for the Cigna Kickstarter for John Barber and Andrew Griffith. So we mentioned that in the toy show, but just want to give one last mention. If you're watching this when on Friday, May 3rd, you still have time to back that Kickstarter if you would like to do that. And as we mentioned, it's already hit its goals. It's hit a couple stretch goals. I'm sure it's by now it's hit at least 2 of its stretch goals. So, take a look at that. If you buy a physical book from the Kickstarter, John and Andrew will sign each copy that is bought. So it's a good deal. I think a majority of the podcast hosts have backed the Cigna Kickstarter. So take a look. Also, did a couple of interviews with John and Andrew about the project. So you can take a look at those and see if you're interested. All right. Well, let's get into the show with our comic review. So we are doing a spoiler comic review of Duke number 5. This is the last issue in the Duke miniseries. This will be full spoilers. So if you have not read the comic yet, please do that before you listen to or watch this this review. Comic's been out for a couple weeks now, so I think if you are interested in this, you should have already had a chance to get it. Let's talk about this story. So Duke number 5 is writer is Josh Williamson, artist Tom Riley, colorist Jordi Belair, letterer Russ Wooten, editor Sean Makowicz, logo and publication design Andre Suarez, and production Richard Mercado. Back in the decommissioned military base, the Pit, Colonel Hawk arrives after the battle with Blood's mercenaries is over. Hawk is understandably upset that Duke has escaped. He tries to threaten Clutch to give up his friend's location, but Clutch refuses to rat out his friend. But it doesn't matter because Stalker recovered the tracking device for Dr. Burkhart's technology in the wreckage of the battle, which should lead them straight to Duke. Meanwhile, at the secret Mars base, Duke is getting pummeled by their experimental battle android trooper, or BAT. The robot has him by the throat with his claw arm and effortlessly tosses him into a crate. Mercer and his boss watch with interest. Mercer is impressed by Duke's tenacity, even though he can't match the strength of the robot warrior. The boss decides not to kill Duke just yet, but rather to offer him a deal. The boss of Mars Industries walks over to the incapacitated Duke and introduces himself. Destro, with his form-fitting metal helmet, is revealed. Destro knows that in all wars, the only winner is the one who controls the weapons. He could use a man of Duke's skills and offers him a job in his organization. Duke angrily refuses. He'd never work for the man whose giant robot that turns into a jet killed his friend. Destro is thoroughly confused. He does not have any robot that can turn into a jet. Destro surmises that it's Duke's own government that created the weapon he is looking for, so that means they have a common enemy. Duke's government has been lying to him the whole time, so why not join forces with Destro to get the answers he needs? Destro extends a hand, and Duke takes it, and then immediately headbutts Destro in the face. Destro's metal armor easily protects him, and he just reels back in shock and annoyance. Duke doesn't buy Destro's speech and would rather destroy all his robots anyway. Destro gives up and says, fine, have it your way. He touches a remote control and reactivates the bat. Destro walks away as the robot resumes giving Duke the beating of his life. The bat replaces its claw arm with a flamethrower and continues its attack. As Destro walks away, he tells Mercer to dispose of Duke's body when the bat's work is done. Mercer tells Destro they have another problem. The tracker for Dr. Burkhart's technology reactivated, meaning Duke might be followed. Destro is annoyed but decides to cut his losses. He tells Scrap Iron to burn everything in the secret base to the ground. Meanwhile, Duke continues to hold his own against the bat. He finds an assault rifle in one of the crates in the warehouse, but it isn't loaded, so he uses it as a club to bludgeon the robot. But the bat fires its flamethrower to keep Duke on the defensive. Duke dodges a blast of flame and manages to connect the butt of the rifle to the robot's head. The robot is stunned, and Duke presses his advantage, jumping on the robot's shoulders and grabbing its head. He pulls with all his strength and rips the robot's heads off. But that doesn't stop the bat's body, and Duke has to keep fighting. He uses the bat's head and the wires connected to it like a flail to continuously smash the rest of the robot's body to pieces. While smashing the robot, he imagines himself smashing Starscream and taking revenge for his friend. His adrenaline finally depleted, Duke collapses in exhaustion, content that he avenged his friend, metaphorically at least. But all this doesn't matter since Destro, Mercer, and Scrap Iron are in the midst of evacuating the base. Scrap Iron has rigged the entire base to explode and he triggers the blast as they leave. Later, news reports mentioned that the body of Conrad Hauser, aka Duke, was discovered by hikers in the Colorado Rockies. There's some solace in the fact that Duke's name was cleared post-mortem. The news reports that Duke was caught in a conspiracy that caused the murder of Dr. Burkhart and several civilians. While Duke was initially framed for these killings, the murderer was actually Sebastian Blood, who remains at large but is on top 10 wanted lists everywhere. Now Duke's body will be laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery as a true American hero. But that's not the end of the story. Duke's death was a cover-up orchestrated by Hawk, and he survived. He's recovering in the hospital, but they're taking no chances and have him handcuffed to the bed. As he wakes, Hawk and Cover Girl greet him. Duke expects Hawk to lock him up forever, but Hawk actually wants him to lead a special covert ops team. Hawk reveals that he knew Duke would never give up chasing down leads about the giant robot cover-up, which is why he let him loose. The evidence they uncovered from Duke's discovery of the secret Mars base enabled them to uncover a conspiracy of groups working with people in the U.S. government. Hawk tells him they need him and his country needs him. But Duke is thoroughly disillusioned and has no trust left. But Hawk has one more thing to show him. They drive back out to the pit, which is in the middle of reconstruction. Clutch is there too, and he's happy to see his friend. Hawk tells him he wants Duke to lead his special mission force. But Duke refuses to fight another secret war. But Hawk has one last tidbit. There are more giant robots out there. The jet was just the tip of the iceberg. They have images of another robot that turns into a semi-truck. Destro didn't build these robots, but someone did, and they need to find out what they are and how to stop them. He asks Duke again to join their team, and immediately Duke answers, "We destroy them all." And that is the end for now. But the beginning of G.I. Joe? Question mark. So, this was kind of underwhelming for me. This felt like a very formulaic, cliched ending to the story, at least. That's how that was my first impression. I think the artwork was really good. The action scenes are really good. But, like, doing the villain thing of walking away before the you've killed the hero, offering the hero to join forces because we're not so different, you and me. I mean, these are really well-worn tropes that are it was just a little bit disappointing to see how formulaic this ended up being at the end of the story. And also, I don't buy, like, Duke has to be superhuman to survive all the things he's gone through in the series. Like, he gets stabbed, shot, bones broken, and he's still able to fight this robot and win. He's just got that much adrenaline with him to do all this stuff.
He is a real American hero, Charles.
I mean, they could have, they, I mean, I can see him, you know, being wounded or whatever, but he actually had, he's doing this with broken bones and being shot. That just, it pushes it over the edge for me that he's either he's superhuman or it just doesn't make sense. I don't know.
A giant robot powered by a man that walked into a mystical object that works for you.
Yeah, that's fine. No problem. Yep.
Okay.
And then at the end, they blew up the base with him inside and he still survived that. he somehow didn't get, it's one thing to have a fake out where he's not dead, but show me something like he found like a heat shield somewhere in the base that protected him or something. I mean, or, and like the last issue where the plane crashed and he just somehow miraculously survived the plane crash and that. Like, they didn't show him ejecting or anything. He just walked away. That's just, I mean, yeah, that, I know I'm not being consistent here, but this is straining my credibility for how much this guy survives. And then, yeah. And then, like I said, the whole plot in this issue was very mustache twirling villain cliche. I just found it, you know, kind of unsatisfying there. So. Those are my thoughts. And then his, you know, his whole quest was built on a lie too. Like he thought he was avenging his friend, but like this had nothing to do with his friend at all. And still at the end, he's like, yeah, I won. I beat this robot to hell, but this had nothing to do with the robot that killed your friend. So how is this? You didn't avenge your friend. You just beat up another robot. So I don't know. I imagine Daryl agrees with a lot of these points here, but what do you think, Daryl?
You're saying the book is shit. yes, I agree. So we're saying that the guy that it got smushed by Starscream's alive too. Then that's what we're saying. He's alive too.
Yeah.
That all of this is a dream. That this Duke has been in the hospital this for the entire time, and that none of this is real, and we can stop reading these stupid G.I. Joe books. I'm all in.
I don't think we said all that.
Oh, that's what I got from it. listen, the art was actually really good. I liked it. I think it fit. I think this the whole series, the art has fit really well. I liked the sequence with the bat, the fighting. I thought it went over really well. I'm not a huge fan of Pimp Destro. like just put him in his normal like cape and stuff, but this like large jewel around his neck, like that has to be something, right? Like, does he always have that? I don't think he does.
He did.
I think Destro is usually wearing the pimp garb.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the preview from the next thing. He's got this weird, like, big neck thing, but he does actually have this jewel as well. Is that jewel part of always has always been part of his getup? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Let's see. I got this.
Look up
image 80s here.
Destro. Yeah.
This is,
oh, he's got the jewel. Look at that. All right.
He's got the pimp collar and everything.
Well, the pimp collar was that's more the classic Destro that I know, but like the image of him in the comic is much more pimp. Yeah,
they pimped my Destro.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I agree with Charles. This is very cliche for, you know, a villain, and then he obviously pulls the Dr. Evil move, and then just was like, what? I'm just going to close the door and assume everything gone according to plan. Yeah, yep. You know,
I'll just put him in this easily escapable situation. It'll be fine. Yeah.
Well, I have a gun. I'll shoot them together. It'll be fun. Yeah. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's always funny when it happens because you know what's exactly going to happen. I mean, I liked the whole fight. It was great because of the sequence of him just kind of ripping the head off and everything was great. So, bats and Cybertronians aren't really on the same level. So if he thinks because he beat up and killed a bat that he's be able to beat up and kill a Cybertronian, I don't think that should be the takeaway from this, because he's they're not really the same.
At this point, he doesn't realize they're from another planet.
No, I know that, but he's, you know, I mean, we are looking at a character that is soaking wet in plot armor here. Like, he is drenched in plot armor. So, like, the guy, like Charles said, survived a plane crash that he just drove it into the ground and walked away. And, yeah, so a part that got me, the characters that appear at the end that, you know, orchestrated the cover-up, right, are not properly introduced. You're just supposed to know who they are. I guess the general was the guy at the beginning of the series that you probably should remember if you're a
Cover Girl was also at the beginning of the series.
Was she?
Yeah.
I don't remember her being there, but yeah. This is 5 months ago, Duke.
It'll read great in the trade. Then you'll remember from issue one to issue five.
Right. So. Yeah, that's the whole idea, I guess, is you got to read this as, one big thing. I want to see the part of the Transformers story where Optimus is just blasting away like that. I'm like, that looks like an awesome scene. I want to see that again. What issue is that? I want to look at that because that looks awesome.
It's when they got the arc back.
So I'm going to reread that issue because that looks awesome.
I believe that was issue five, either issue five or six. Of
Transformers. It was because he has a Megatron arm and his blaster and just when they're going against Devastator and stuff.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I want that. That looks awesome. I want to read that. I'm glad they're giving advertisements for Transformers books in the G.I. Joe book. If this becomes a fully fledged G.I. Joe book, we can stop reading it, right?
Oh.
Yes? Great. Okay.
Well, this was the last issue of the series.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's going to spawn two more. It's the Hydra.
I know. Well, they've already announced. There's Scarlet.
Scarlet and Destro.
Yeah, with the preview of Destro in this book, which I did not read. So it was not on my homework list, so I did not read it.
But it's three pages, but it's not that exciting.
It's fine. The book is fine. it does exactly what we thought it was going to do, which was going to set up the G.I. Joe team. So, yeah. Big whoop.
All right, Jeremy, what were your thoughts?
I'm going to be the dissenter and say I enjoyed the book.
God.
I mean, it was formulaic. But it was fun. And the fight was really good. I would say regarding the injuries and stuff, it wouldn't surprise me if at some point they realize that they reveal that Duke is actually a robot. I mean, because it was.
Did have that thought.
I mean, you headbutt someone that is basically wearing a steel helmet, and you don't come back with a concussion.
Plot armor.
Yeah, but. Despite all of that, I had fun with the book. It hit all the notes I was wanting it to hit. And like you said, the art was fantastic. I really like the art. I the style, especially kind of at the end when we're seeing them in the hospital, it gives me kind of a classic, classic style of comics in terms of like, General Hawk's eyes just being kind of imprint dots, and I don't know. I really like that. But this, I'm going to enjoy reading Duke and eventually like the G.I. Joe team just being against any of the Cybertronians initially until they, have to come to the realization that the Autobots are not, their enemy. So I can see that's going to probably be a long time from now, just with the way that they're pacing everything. But I'm enjoying this first part of the G.I. Joe side of the Energon universe. And with the preview for Destro at the end, since you didn't read it, Daryl, it basically just sets up how Destro has his little country and basically the Doctor Doom of this universe. Yeah, some fictional Eastern European country probably. That's basically all it is.
All right. Well, that's our review of Duke number 5, and I think we will keep the train rolling with Destro and Scarlet. Next month, so we get to
come on
Cobra Commander number 5 this month, and so we'll finish that up and then keep going. So sorry, Daryl.
You know how many fucking characters there are?
They're not going to do a series for every character.
Hey, they are at this point.
Not to spoil what's coming up next, but you'll have some content next week that you'll enjoy, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, as this show goes up, it's Friday, and then Saturday, tomorrow, May 4th, may the 4th be with you, Jeremy, is Free Comic Book Day. So it's Star Wars Day and Free Comic Book Day. So you can pick up your Energon Universe Free Comic Book Day issue that has a Joe story, a Transformer story, and a Void Rival story in that Free Comic Book Day copy. So check that out. And we should be able to talk about this next week in alt mode, since we'll have it the day before we record. So stay tuned for that. All right, let's move on to some convention news.
All right, just one thing in convention news, and this is from TF Nation. They have announced that Andrew Wildman is going to be attending. He was a writer on, writer and artist on Transformers, like the original Marvel run, War Within with Dreamwave, Regeneration 1. He's done X-Men, and he has some creator-owned projects called Horizon and Oxygen. And we got to talk to him at TF Con a couple years ago now. And he's a great guy.
Last year. It was last year.
Was it last year? Oh.
Yeah.
It all blends together. But yeah, but he was a great guy to talk to. And I'm sure he's no stranger to TF Nation. So kind of his home turf. So check that out. TF Nation is August 9th through 11th at in Birmingham, UK. So go to tfnation.com and get all that information.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think Simon probably gets to TF Nation pretty much more frequently than he gets out to TF Con. Yeah. So for us, it was a treat.
This is Andrew, not Simon.
Oh, sorry.
Andrew.
Andrew Wildman gets out to TF Nation more frequently than TF Con.
You're thinking of what we talked about while you were out, Simon Furman.
Yeah.
TFCon.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, I'm excited about that, too.
We talked about that.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, for the folks at TF Nation, they get a chance to see Andrew and Simon probably pretty frequently, where it's a rare treat for us over here in North America. So yeah, we got Andrew last year. We're getting Simon this year. That's awesome. Oh, so
and if you are in the UK, I just saw down here on the page, discount rate hotel rooms go on sale for ticket holders on May the 4th. So. As you're listening to this, it's probably already, you know, tomorrow in the UK.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's all the convention news. Let's finish up the show with feedback. All right. So we got some YouTube comments on last week's show when you guys talked about the Transformers 1 trailer. I unfortunately missed out on that conversation. But maybe I'll add some feedback of my own when we get through this here.
Transmissionpodcast.com/feedback, Charles.
This is VIP feedback. This is VIP feedback. I'm doing it live. But yeah, let's go to our listeners first. It's from DMC 2008. They say, initially, the trailer took me off guard. After 7 movies, I didn't expect it to be aimed so directly at kids. It reminded me of Earthspark right away. Now that I've had some time to digest, I'm feeling very optimistic. This could be a way to bring some of the beloved IDW stories to a larger audience. Imagine this new series does well, and we get a More Than Meets the Eye movie one day. I never thought it would be possible, but after seeing this trailer, I have a renewed sense of hope for the franchise. For once, these characters are treated as real characters, not movie monsters or set pieces. I'm worried about box office returns, but if this connects with kids, we are in good shape. I agree with all those points.
Yeah, for sure.
Nathan says, Transformers 1 looks good. I just wish there was another similar age character instead of Bumblebee. Bumblebee was supposed to be young, not as old as Cup. Ultra Magnus, Hot Rod, Ironhide, etc. In particular, Hot Rod could get away with the same humor and satisfy my 1986 movie bias. So, yeah, I mean, I think Bumblebee is a pretty recognizable character. So I think that's they decide, you know, if it's in. If it's in the movie universe, you know, if they want to squint and say it's in the movie universe, you gotta have a movie character in there that everyone recognizes. Bumblebee is, you know, Bumblebee's the one movie character that's been in every movie or almost every movie. So, you know,
it's honestly, and I've mentioned this to you guys, I don't think it's any surprise, but the popularity of Bumblebee is insane. Like the marketing job that they've done to push Bay versus Bumblebee on the kids, I guess, that are now adults, right? Is crazy. This past year, the hockey season, my daughter had a teammate who, when the parents kind of found out, I told them that I was a Transformers fan. They said, oh, well, our daughter, she's actually saving up money to buy a Camaro as her first car. And I'm like, really? She's like, she loves Bumblebee that much. She wants her first car to be a Camaro. I'm like, okay, good luck.
Our generation kids would be like, I want a yellow VW Bug.
Yeah, which would be much cheaper.
Much cheaper.
but the kid doesn't know a lot more, like much more about Transformers other than the fact that she wants a Camaro. She loves the Bumblebee character and wants a Camaro. And I feel a little sad for her, but, you know, she's missing out on a lot of other stuff. But that's her Transformers. Bumblebee is like, it epitomizes Transformers for her, and Hasbro and the marketing people behind it have just done a superb job at pushing that Camaro Bumblebee on everybody. And yeah, we actually was watching another 1986 movie review, just a couple people watching the movie for the first time, I guess. I'm sure, I believe it, they're watching it for the first time, but whatever. They commented, like, saying, oh, well, this is what Bumblebee used to look like. You know, I'm used to him being a Camaro, a yellow Camaro, and I'm not really used to him being a Volkswagen Beetle. And
I think, like, I saw that same video.
This is crazy for me, right? That, you know, obviously we're older, so we're, you know, we're used to the Bumblebee as a Beetle, but it's, you know, it's just, it's nuts that they have zero recognition of anything prior to the Bayverse, you know. And I know that we talked about it before, saying that, you know, Michael Bay's 07 movie was going to be G1 for some people, but it's really starting to actually take hold now, because all these people who would have been like 6 to 10, right, when the movie came out for the first time, they're all in their 20s now, you know, and they're all making decisions and, you know, putting, you know, being adults in the world, which is crazy to think about. So yeah, I mean, we've talked about it on crazy amount on the show over the past, you know, 10 years and counting, but Bumblebee is like, he is the franchise at this point. Optimus might be the voice of the franchise, but Bumblebee is the character of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't hurt things that they chose an incredibly cool looking car.
No, it never. Yeah.
I'm still pissed that they made him not talk in that first movie, and that stuck around for so long that's also fixed in their minds that he talks with the radio, and that's how he talks. And it's like,
if they do that to him in Transformers 1, that will really upset me. Like, if at some point he gets his voice box damaged.
Mm-hmm. Well, that same movie review, they said, oh, I'm not used to him hearing Bumblebee talk. Like, he talks with the radio. Like, he should be talking with the radio. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, you know, of course, there's a Simpsons episode for this. That Simpsons, the first Simpsons episode that had Adam West, and Bart goes up to Adam West like and he says, "You're not Batman." Like, yeah, yeah. See, here's a picture of me with Robin, and Bart says, "Who the hell's Robin?" Because that was around, you know, that was right after the 89 yeah. Batman that had rebooted Batman. And you know, Adam West was the old fogey Batman. He was not the cool new Batman.
Yes. So yeah. We are the old fogey Batman at this point. I don't want to be old fogey Batman.
Yeah. Well, I have some thoughts about Transformers 1. Can I put them here in the feedback section?
No, we're out of time. It's been... All mode is only 30 minutes now, Charles. We'd like to thank our Patreons for coming out.
I'm talking. So I have largely stayed away from social media, so I have not seen what complaints people had about the trailers, and I think I'm happier for it because I really liked the trailer. I thought the animation was great. I thought the character designs look great. It's funny that, I mean, that person's like really crude drawing from that we saw last year actually turned out to be at least somewhat true, because they do have the big holes in their chest where the transformation cogs go. So that guy did see something. He just didn't have the artistic ability to render it.
But I'm sure we're all similar. Like, it looked like this. I can't express it.
But I think ILM has done an awesome job with, at least with the visuals that we've seen in this trailer. I think the bot designs are great. I think they do a great job of evoking the characters they're going to be, but looking like younger versions of them. So I can see these as younger versions of Optimus Prime, younger version of Megatron, younger version of Bumblebee, younger version of Alita One. They all, I think they all capture that look really well. I'm fine with Orion Pax having a mouth because he's not Optimus Prime yet. He's Orion Pax, so it's fine. He's supposed to have a mouth when he's Orion Pax, so that, you know, there's no problems there. But when he gets the Matrix, that it needs to close. When the Matrix is in, the mouth is gone. So that's all I got to say. I was really happy with the trailer. My one complaint is the Rolling Stones, having the Start Me Up music made it feel like a very generic trailer. So I would have preferred to have, you know, just the score or something instead of that music. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it looks really good. I think it looks, I'm hopeful that it will, like, it feels like they're treating Transformers and the characters and the story as really as first class citizens in this movie, whereas all the other live action movies have the Transformers have been second class citizens, which is what I want, is them to be first class citizens. I have no idea what this is going to do at the box office. I mean, we're post pandemic. I don't know what the numbers are going to be. I hope people like this. I hope people see it as like a Pixar movie where they go and take their kids and everything.
There's a movie that was coming out that same weekend with Mark Hamill as the voice of a robot character, and they moved that back like a week or two later to avoid being on the same weekend as this.
Okay. Go ahead. To address some of the things, I did watch your guys' discussion of it last week, so I took some notes so I could just mention some of the points you guys made. You guys did good. You did a good job. I don't have any criticisms or anything. Just some things, like if you mentioned the Manganese Mountains, that is from the Marvel Comics. That was where Fortress Maximus and his group were hiding out in the first Headmasters spinoff comic. They started off in the Manganese Mountains, and then they made a ship and they flew off to Nebulos. So that was a location that was definitely mentioned several times in the Marvel Comics. So you got that one right.
Probably not relevant.
But we still don't know if that's what it's called in the show or in the movie. But
yeah, yeah. We'll see.
I knew I'd heard the phrase before.
I definitely think it's Quintessons that are the villains there. I agree with you guys. I think that one bot they showed like being grappled by the Quintesson is I'm thinking that's Sentinel Prime. I mean, the Chris McFeely's video also speculated that was Sentinel Prime. So I'm going to agree with that, too. I think I really like Cybertron being populated as well. I think that's something that you can only do in a big budget film. I think none of the TV shows had the technology to populate Cybertron until I think maybe Earthspark is kind of the first show that has like where the technology is far enough that it doesn't break the budget to have enough characters running around in the CGI world. I think that in the past, it just each character model was just too expensive to render that you couldn't get a large populated world, but you can do that with a big budget film that you can't do that on TV. Which I think it's great. Cybertron looks really great in this movie. The animals on Cybertron's surface, I thought, oh, are these turbo foxes? But they look more like gazelles. So I guess turbo gazelles, maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see. I still don't like the title Transformers 1. They should have figured out a better title. Transformers Origin, Transformers Till All Are One, Transformers The Beginning. I mean, I don't know. Something that isn't confusing for the future put in the first Transformers movie. You mean Transformers 1? Or you mean Transformers 2007? Or you mean Transformers 86? So
Transformers Year 1?
That would have been better.
It takes
Transformers 0?
It takes a lot from DC at that point, I think.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to do Transformers 2 and Transformers 3.
That's even worse. I mean, I will be great. I think a trilogy of these movies would be great, but I think that they need to figure out better titles, but they're not going to. So I guess it's fine. Transformers doesn't have canon. So everyone complaining about canon, you're beating a dead horse or you're tilting at a windmill. Transformers is like, from the beginning, Transformers had multiple continuities. Just the Marvel comic and the cartoon started off with two separate continuities. And so you're never going to have a single continuity canon that where everything lines up. So
the first character to talk is Ravage.
So, don't worry. I mean, Lorenzo de Bonaventura wants all the movies to be in the same universe, regardless of all the inconsistencies. So he's always going to say everything's in canon. Everything lines up. They don't line up, but it doesn't matter. As long as it's a good story and a good movie, it's fine. This could be one version of the Transformers origin. And it can probably fit in every, however you want to fit it in whatever continuity you're comfortable with, put it there. But, Transformers is a mythos, a mythology. It's not a canon. It's like Greek mythology where multiple gods have different origin stories and they're all, and they none of them line up. So it doesn't matter. Optimus did at the end of the 2007 movie, when Megatron died, Optimus did say like, you brought this on yourself, brother. But I think I took it to mean like, brother in arms, not literal brother. I think maybe the movie people intended them to be brothers at some point, but I think it wasn't ever explicitly stated on screen. So I don't know. But that's just my opinion. I think maybe we might get Cullen and Welker in a flash forward at some point in this movie. Where we see where they end up as the Prime and Megatron of the future or the present or whatever. Like we had those two little scenes in the trailer where that showed them as at least the Megatron looked like he was very much in the future. I think that would like, if we had like one line of dialogue with them to line it up, that would be cool. We'll see. I want to push back on Daryl's point that the 86 movie didn't have laughs. I thought the 86 movie, I mean, it wasn't like a comedy, but it had laughs. The Dinobots were there for comic relief. You know, good part, swoop, tell cup, good, tell swoop, good part. You know, all the stuff with the Dinobots, all the stuff with the Junkions, the stuff on Quintesson with the Dinobots arguing about cesium salami, beryllium bologna, and then how they were like smashing the Sharktacons and making jokes and everything. So I mean, it was a kid's movie too. So I don't. So this movie, all these movies, and all the like a larger point, all these kind of genre movies are never aimed really at adults. They're aimed at kids or teenagers, and adults just like them. So I think Transformers has always been aimed at kids. I think the important thing is that it takes the Transformers seriously as characters and story points and environment. But it's still going to be like aimed at kids in terms of tone and trying to inject like those themes that are put on the level of something that kids can understand. So, but I think, you know, you can still do serious themes and serious things that are going to reach kids. And that's what good movies try to do. They try to reach like all your audiences. So I hope that this movie does that. It seems, and I read that Josh Cooley interview. I think the Josh Cooley interview really showed how he was really invested in this story and really focused on the characters first, which I appreciated. So I hope that's a lesson for any future Transformers movies. So yeah. I think I got everything off my chest. So nice. Thanks for indulging me.
That's good. We weren't recording any of that. So
but yeah, no, I mean, bottom line,
you made good points. It's, you know, I'll accept the points where you said I was wrong.
I don't think I said that, so I guess it's a win-win.
Oh, you said I was, I didn't, you know, you push back on my, you know, 86 movie being not funny or funny. And, I have to say, I've seen that movie about 1,000 times and, I don't laugh anymore. So
maybe it's because you just have been ground down as an adult.
I don't think so. I'm still very vibrant and young and, you're old. Shut up.
Well, I think Transformers 1 is going to have funny moments, but it's not going to be a comedy. I mean, we're going to have serious moments where, like, we've seen in the movie, people are fighting, attacking. Alita 1 does that badass move where she knocking the enemy over and then shooting, and we see Bumblebee slices a guy's head off by accident.
I think the movie is going to be a lot funnier than we expect. I think Keegan-Michael Key is going to be very funny. You know, I look back at the 86 movie cast and like the funniest person in that cast would have been like Eric Idle, you know, and
maybe John Machida Jr.
I mean, yeah, but all I would have heard as a kid was that's the Micro Machine guy, you know, that's all I would have heard. And that, you know, and as a kid, I can tell you, I had a problem understanding what Eric Idle was saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I got that he was trying to talk TV, but he was also talking TV with a British accent. And so I'm like, okay, well, what is he actually saying? What is, you know, and I didn't understand what he was saying. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so if he was saying jokes, great. I didn't get them. Right. So there wasn't a comedian in that cast. Right. Yeah. So, right. And I say that knowing you know, I know that Frank Welker actually started off as a comedian. So yes, I say that. Yeah. Okay. If you want to send your corrections, right. Fine. But Megatron was not a comedian.
Well, I mean, also in the '80s, this was not for animated movies. Like the animated movies were not sold on their cast back in the '80s. Like Transformers was actually unique in that they like prominently displayed the cast at the beginning of that movie to try and get non-Transformers people attracted to this movie, because, you know, Lionel Stander and Robert Stack are in this movie, so you should care about it for some reason. Mm-hmm.
The way they used to do it back in the '80s, right? They used to put the credits at the start.
They did for animated movies. They did not put the credits for voice actors prominently like that. That was not a trend.
There was not a lot of animated movies making it to the theaters other than Disney, right? They treated this like an actual theatrical release, like a legitimate movie. That's what they treated it as, which, I mean, garnered a bit of a respect, right? They're saying this is a real movie. This isn't a Disney movie. This is a real movie. Yeah, it's about the Saturday morning cartoon Transformers, but it's a real movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, but they also, I think that was part of their problem, is they were trying to market it as an adult movie for adults when it was, they should have, their audience was still the 10-year-old kids who love Transformers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it did not do well. I mean, if we want to be honest, it was not a success, right?
So, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I feel like this, like you said, Keegan-Michael Key is hilarious, and he will make this funny, but this is not going to be a comedy. I think this trailer makes it seem like it's going to be a comedy, but I don't think this movie is a comedy. It's going to be a fun action movie with funny moments in it.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, those are my thoughts on Transformers 1. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure if everyone else wants, I mean, we already got some feedback. So, I mean, anyone else who wants to chime in, please send us some notes and, you know, let us know what you think. I mean, we've got a few months before the movie comes out, so there'll be plenty of time to speculate. I'm guessing there's going to be at least one more trailer that'll be out before the movie. So we'll have a chance to speculate. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited. I have a positive. This give me a positive impression. So, looking forward to it. All right, and I guess I'm looking forward to getting to the end of this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. So, thanks everyone for watching and listening. As always, we give a shout out to our masterpiece Donatrons. These are the folks who continue to support the podcast at our highest level on Patreon. And we really appreciate that, so that's why we give them a mention in every episode. So thank you once again to John Forks Levengood and Demon Tech 82. You guys rock. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for watching and listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Transmissions. If you'd like to join the conversation, travel to our Discord channel at transmissionspodcast.com/discord. Want some cool Transmission swag? Feast your eyes on our Transmissions gear at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. If you'd like to support our podcast, go to transmissionspodcast.com/support or tell your friends about our show. We'll see you next time.